Welcome back to Tasteland. I am Francis Zier.
And I'm Daisy Alioto.
And Daisy, who are we speaking to today?
Today we're speaking with Claire Landsbaum. She's a New York City-based journalist. She's the deputy editor of High Snobiety. And she was previously at The Cut. Before that, she was at Vanity Fair when they still had The Hive, RIP. And she was also at Business Insider for a while, spearheading a lot of their cool cultural investigations and features. And she's also a friend of mine, and I'm really excited to have her on.
Excellent. Before Claire joins us, one thing I did last night, I went and saw One Battle After Another for the second time. But the reason I saw it twice,
they're calling them Battle Boys.
They call them Battle Boys. One screening after another. But no, the reason I went for a second time too, I went with a friend who hadn't seen it. But I tried the first time I went, I tried to go to the Vista Vision screening at Regal Union Square, right? Which there's only three theaters in the country doing the Vista Vision thing. Which I'm already like cringing at myself for, you know.
For the uninitiated, this is like a film style.
It's a film format that they hadn't projected. They'd filmed on it more recently. Brutalist was filmed with VistaVision, but it hadn't been projected for like 50 years.
I did see the VistaVision screening of Brutalist, I think, because I saw it at the
Screen it in VistaVision.
Oh, they didn't screen it in VistaVision.
No, they filmed it in VistaVision.
Okay.
But what I'll say is, so the first time I tried to go, the projector was broken. They're having all these issues with it. Last night it was not broken. And I will say it was a little bit more colorful. The light was incredible. It was like, I mean, you know, the movie was more fun the first time because it was the first time I'd seen it. But yeah, VistaVision. I like it.
That is very cool. I also saw a movie
yesterday. Thank you for saying that, Daisy.
You're welcome. I also saw a movie yesterday. I saw The History of Sound.
I hear that's good.
With Tatum, actually, former podcast guest and friend of the pod, Katie Hayes, who has not come on the podcast, but is a fan. So it was really good. Very sad. I cried. There was a Bowdoin College mention. So I didn't know about that. Yeah. Cameo, I guess, is the word I was looking for. And that was really cool. And I also brought some stuff to show you that has been sent to my house recently.
For the listener, because they can't see this, maybe I'll do some descriptions. I'll do some closed captioning.
Yeah, I know. Francis and I have been thinking about doing more structured segments. So I went rogue and decided we're going to do show and tell today. So my first thing is this hat. All I had to do was give my phone number and text them hat a bunch of times. But this is from Gazetteer San Francisco, which I believe is a media collective.
For the listener, we're looking at a black hat with a serif typeface, Gazetteer, pretty big. Below it, San Francisco, a little bit smaller. That's white embroidery, black hat.
Everyone was getting those thinking caps from Anthropic, but I really imprinted on this one. I was like, I have to have that hat. Obviously, I don't have enough dad hats. So, yeah.
Sticker, by the way, the sticker is still on the brim.
The sticker's still on the brim.
I don't know if Daisy is like a sticker on the brim type of guy, but.
Last night I was at the Ambrook office. So I thought of you because I was like, when we did the VC-backed farms, we didn't talk about Ambrook, which creates software products for farmers, as far as I know.
I don't really know what that is, to be honest.
And yeah, well, we didn't get into it, but it could be interesting for you to look at for a follow-up. Also, okay, I'm jumping all over the place. Sorry. They have merch. They have hats that say American Prosperity on them. So I also was like, now I want that hat. But I think Gazetteer might be a media collective. So maybe good creator spotlight guest.
You don't even know what it is?
No, I do know what it is. They do local San Francisco news. Okay. Sorry, it's on my blog roll. I read it for Claude. I uploaded something today. They're on Jollibee Watch because San Francisco is getting its first Jollibee. So they're on the Jollibee beat. And the back of the hat says "News for Humans by Humans." I thought that was pretty cool. Ben doesn't know about it yet, so he hasn't stolen it.
Okay, that's kind of an anti-anthropic little text on the back.
Yeah, I would say if we're comparing it
to the thinking cap.
This, do you know what this is?
All Girls Be Mine Alone. It's the second book from Joyland Publishing. Regular listeners will remember star guest Cora Lewis and her book Information Age. I am not familiar with this new book, though I've seen you post about it on Twitter a bevy of times.
It's very different from Information Age, but like in a really nice way. They're good complements of each other because it's not written in fragments. It's a narrative. It's a nested narrative. So the book takes place in two parts, and the second part is basically a long story somebody's telling. So it is like it's a queer ghost story, which is how it's being advertised, which was cool. But that makes it sound like a lot more genre, where it's actually, I thought it was very sophisticated. There was a lot of references to classical music. It takes place at a music school.
Who's the subject of Mine? Whose Mine is it?
So this line is, it's a lyric from, who wrote the, Tchaikovsky. So his opera for Peter and the Wolf. Okay. Yes. Okay. I believe this is a line in the opera version. It's a translated line from one of the characters in that opera. Like I want to say the wolf, but I could be wrong. Sorry guys, if I'm butchering that. But there's a lot of like references like that in there. And I thought you would like it because it really captures the atmosphere of being in like an Eastern European city. Part of it takes place in Vienna. Part of it takes place in, I believe, St. Petersburg. But it has that like kind of like cold winter, wind whipping outside, ducking into a sort of like below the street tea house, having a cigarette and trying to keep your hand warm vibe. Like, I just think it's a perfect read for this time of year. And because it's a novella, you can get through it quickly. But I just responded to the atmosphere of it so well because I haven't been to that part of the world in like a really long time. And it just Like it made me want to go to Vienna like so badly. So that's that. And then last thing, because I know we're running out of time. Have you ever seen this book before or photos from it?
No. So we're looking at the Office Book Design Series, Private and Executive Offices, large square book. It's kind of an inset photo of an office. I feel like I've seen stuff on Twitter or something about this recently where it's like in the 80s, this photographer went to a bunch of boardrooms and took pictures of their offices.
It's technically a textbook. Yeah. It's kind of like Busy Town for adults.
Yeah.
So it's a former textbook that's sort of become like an art book. And I think
an art book. Who do you think are the consumers of this? Is it the Silicon Valley taste crowd? Is it artists? Is it creative directors?
Is it the new
Rick Rubin book? Yeah,
it's all of us. I think like I had seen it around. It's very prune coated. I didn't ask Tyler if he has this. Tyler's very good about like scanning his art books and putting the scans online, which I forgot you can do. But this book, like, it gets curated a lot. So if people know about it and you find it online, they'll be selling it for, like, a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But if you just find it in, like, one of the old textbook, like, thrift sellers, then it's, like, priced like an old textbook. So this didn't even have a photo of it. But since I knew what I was looking for, it was very cheap.
That's how you find things, by the way. My apartment, we found it on Craigslist and there was no photos. People are afraid to venture out of the green fields of Street Easy.
Right, because I was like, really, why would somebody sell a fake copy of this book?
Exactly.
Like, if it's a contemporary book and there's no photos, it's like, okay, that's definitely the AI version. But, like, people, like, it's kind of like a boring textbook, but with incredible photos. So if you're listening and you're looking for this, Google it and the author and then roll the dice on some of these, like, old thrift textbook sites because it's the same fucking book. So tell me more about this piece that you just wrote for High Sobriety.
That was a front of book story for our September issue. It was more a photo shoot first, piece second. It was about a bunch of cool New Yorkers who work in the fashion world who like to go bowling as a third space instead of like clubbing or I don't know, whatever else cool young people do in New York.
Because the bowling alley in question was the Gutter on the Lower East Side. I've never been to that one. I've been to the original Gutter, I think, in Williamsburg. But
me too.
It's like a bar more than it's like a, right?
They told me about something called a green tea shot, which I had never heard of. Do you guys know what this is?
I've heard of that, yeah. But I haven't.
It's alcohol though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sure is, Francis.
What
is
that?
It is alcohol. All I can think in my head is like sucking down alcoholic boba. Like, it's not boba. Texturally pleasant in my
Do
mind.
Do they make alcoholic boba?
They should.
Yeah, this sounds like this would really hit the intersection of alcoholism.
They're called buzz balls.
TikTok food in New York. Buzz balls. Yes. Yeah, right.
Nasty. Yeah, but that was like a fun look at how a fashion shoot comes together, which is not something I had normally done. And I think the way we do it at High Snob is also pretty low key. Like, we're lo-fi, not necessarily for any reason other than that's how we approach stories. Like, we wanted to feel intimate and genuine, and so yeah, it was cool to like observe that in action and then to write something to go alongside it that felt also kind of intimate and genuine and just quippy. It was actually a fun recall back to, like, I took a class in graduate school called Front of Book, which was just how to make the front of book of a magazine, and it was taught by Nick Marino, who at the time was the longtime front of book editor at GQ,
and literally my old boss.
Yes, I know. So
worlds are colliding. Nick was my boss at Hodinkee.
Hodinkee, I know. He also tried to hire me at Hodinkee, and then I decided that I didn't know enough about watches. So
Claire, that was the right decision.
Well, what did he teach you? What did he teach you back in grad school?
Basically, how to be entertaining in writing in a really concise and targeted way. It actually was a really hard thing to learn how to do, because in journalism school, which I did attend, they teach you how to interview and how to do, like, how to approach strangers on the street and how to approach people and talk to people after a traumatic event. Like, I don't know, in Missouri, a tornado. I went to the University of Missouri Journalism School, and there were many tornadoes that happened. And I also, like, wrote a bunch of obits, which was really sad and specific. And I, you know, tried my hand at what I thought was feature writing at the time, which, you know, looking back makes me want to shrivel up and die at my, like, college feature stories. But yeah, no one had ever taught me how to write for the front of a magazine, which is basically like doing really good captions and packaging stuff in a servicey way that's also not repetitive with, like, every single front of book story that has come before. Because, I mean, to some extent it will be cyclical, but also, like, you don't want to do the same, you know, red lip beauty trend story. No offense, Daisy.
No offense taken.
For the listener, she's wearing it.
As has come.
Okay, yeah, but for me, it's not a trend. It's a lifestyle.
No, it's a lifestyle. And I've known that about you, so I can vouch. But yeah, I just how to be original. How to have an original thought is, like, really difficult. And I think a core tenet of magazine editing when it comes down to it.
I saw a viral tweet the other day that was talking about, I think it was this guy, Will Mandis. He was like, oh, like, parties have become too much just, like, cocktail fact listing. Like, everyone listens to the same podcast, so people kind of come in with the same cultural observations, which makes me think of that scene in my favorite film, in an excellent fall film, When Harry Met Sally, when they're at dinner and she, the Carrie Fisher character quotes that guy's magazine story to him, like, his observation, which was like, she was like, oh, I read somewhere that, like, restaurants are to the 90s like what theater was to the 80s. And he's like, I wrote that. So Will was basically saying, like, since everyone listens to the same podcast, people show up to a party and they basically will, like, repeat a cultural observation somebody made on a podcast, but it's not original. Everyone has the same references. It's interesting because, like, to me, the art of conversation is, like, you come in with something interesting to say, but then you respond to the person that's in front of you. And so I thought that was a little bit of an oversimplification. But I also wanted to say, like, if you're listening to this podcast and you repeat something I've said on this podcast at a party, you owe me $20.
What's your Venmo?
Yeah.
Who owes you?
We'll put it in the show links.
Do they owe you for taking your thought, or do you owe them for the free distribution?
It's a good question. Maybe actually I should pay you if you mention us at a party. But when you said, Claire, when you were talking just now and you mentioned doing things lo-fi, when I read the Styles profile of this sort of, like, high snobiety under Noah, because he came in as the editor, like, within the last year, That was something that, like, yeah, in January, that's something that I really took away, other than like that you looked great and really tan in the photo of you.
I had no right to look that tan. I don't understand why that happened. Maybe it's the flash, but thank you.
It was really cool. That was something I really came away with, that sort of like lo-fi DIY-ness, not over polishing everything, is like a big part of the ethos that he wants to bring to the magazine. Is that something that like he talked about, like when he hired you, and he talked about like what his goals were?
For sure. It's also something that I value because I like journalistic honesty. And I think that is difficult to find sometimes in the land of glossy magazines and the land of like culture and fashion publications. Especially when you have so many cooks in the kitchen, which is something I'm learning more and more about. The publicists, the reps, the photographers, the stylists, like there's a lot of components. And so it can be hard to like cut through all that noise and get a story and get images that feel like close to the bone. So yes, that is something he talked to me a lot about. And that I think is actually why it made sense for me to join something like Hostabiety. I've never come from that world. It's always been one that I've looked at with starry eyes. Like I was Devil Wears Prada pilled from age like 13. I come from much more of a reporting background. Like I was a politics editor for almost 5 years. I started as a politics writer before that. And then I went to Business Insider and was editing like investigations and exposés. So it in some ways I was an unlikely choice for an outlet like Hostabiety. But then when it comes to Noah's Hostabiety, I think it made a lot more sense because he likes that down to earthness. He likes radical honesty, and our theme for the redesign, the print issue redesign, actually was radical legibility, which I love. Which is just, if you open the magazine, you can read a really good print story and look at some really cool images, and that is the basis of what we're trying to build. Like you should be able to flip to any page and like zoom in on a paragraph and take a line away right away. It's kind of like the advertising motto of like, you have 2 seconds to get someone's attention. But that's also something I really liked, because I'm such a classicist in that I just like to edit and publish good revelatory stories. And I think that I want people to be able to read them. So in all ways, it actually is like, we get along quite well from the perspective of our approach.
Radical legibility is such a good turn of phrase, because we've been actually talking about legibility a lot recently on the podcast. I feel like it runs through some of our conversations about taste, where it's like, when it's too legible, then you're kind of like in Labubu land. Mm-hmm. But if it's not legible enough, you're sort of in like academia. And especially with like, all like great culture comes out of fashion subcultures. And then in tech, you have like almost like software subcultures, and you want them to be legible enough that people who are outside the community can kind of find their people and become part of that subculture. But you don't want them to be so legible that they get co-opted by the sort of like algorithmic machine. And I think like, I'm reading Blank Space by W. David Marks right now, and it's like all history of contemporary culture going back to like the new millennium is kind of this like struggle of culture being created in subcultures, and then the subculture kind of like speed running the death process, because everyone comes in and is like, hell yeah, meet me in the bathroom, the Strokes, oh, that's an American Express commercial, okay. Like, so it's been on my mind a lot. But I also remembered, as we were doing the intro, so remember when you went to Berlin for the first time?
Yes.
Okay. So Hostabiety is based in Berlin. Claire had never been. So Francis is the person I texted to get recommendations to send to you.
Oh, thank you. Because
he goes to Berlin multiple times a year. So we were going to ask if you were ended up doing any of those things, or what your favorite thing was.
I did such a bad job in Berlin in that I have not done a lot of business trips. Like yeah. Travel for work is almost entirely new to me.
Did you feel like a fake adult?
I always feel like a fake adult.
I mean, whenever I'm on a business trip, like I have like little like sax music playing in my brain, like do 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 do.
I don't even know what I mostly just felt like jet lag.
How long were you there?
I'm I was there for a week, but what I did was I did not schedule any time on the front or back end to just like not be working. I came in for a high sobriety 20-year anniversary party that we had at the store, which is now defunct, RIP. So it was cool. It was cool to see it before we closed off the e-commerce portion of our company, and the retail portion, I guess. But I landed, I went to work the next day. I worked for like 5 days and then I left. So I didn't really have any time to do anything cool. I did go to the new National Gallery alone.
Yes,
I love that place. It's a really transcendent experience. And then there were a lot of like tactile exhibits that encouraged you to pick up the sculpture and play around with it, which was part of the, and there was like a Yoko Ono exhibit that was about mending sculpture. Huh. Not mending sculpture, mending, just mending. There was a bunch of shattered, like, pottery, mass market, like, teacups and saucers and things. And the exhibit's title, I don't remember what it was. But you were meant, there was, like, tape and string, and you were meant to, like, put it back together. So I had a nice time touching art, which is something I would never typically do. But it was a nice return to, like, a childlike sense of joy and peace. And then I went outside and saw a bunch of kids like recording TikTok dances. And then I felt.
Were there a bunch of skaters as well? Every time I go to this.
And they were like, Emma Chamberlain, I love your work.
Literally. no, there were some skaters. It was kind of late in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I was watching the sunset, but these kids were like really good dancers. And then I was like, oh, I guess this is where we are as a culture. Like after school, kids go and record dances and post them online. But I had a nice time there. And then I did a little bit of vintage shopping. I got some Mugler sunglasses and a little Prada chic dress. And that was lovely.
All right. Send me pictures after the podcast.
I will. I love the sunglasses. I wear them every day. But I was
feeling that's very, a successful trip just on that alone.
It was fun. Then the party was lovely. Yeah. And I met a bunch of coworkers and, you know, hung out with Noah and we went to the sandwich cart and then the security tried to bounce us out.
Of your own party?
Of our own party. Well, we had left to go to the sandwich cart across the street, which was also part of the party. And then we tried
to re-enter. Was this like a donor kebab? Like what type of sandwich are we talking?
This was, it was not a kebab at all. It was like a panini almost.
Mm. Oh.
Mm. It was a famous sandwich cart that I wish I could remember the name of. And maybe I'll put it in the show notes, but I've now learned that you can say that on a podcast. But yeah, when we tried to re-enter the party, it was winding down and they were like, you can't come in. And it was very, I got to like employ my bouncer sweet talking skills as like a small femme presenting person in mm-hmm. front of my coworkers, which was a fun and new experience for me. In general, very like emblematic of the whole high snob experience so far. Which is
what's the storefront is turning into like High Snob will still own it, but it'll be like more of a rotating activation space or something. What's going on? Because it was a store, no longer.
That will be the immediate future, and then the long term, I'm not sure what will happen to that space.
They're doing an Anthropic coffee shop, Francis.
Oh, great.
No. Do you know?
You have to ask Jürgen.
I don't know if it's just Berlin. I think it's elsewhere too, but they have their own Blank Street coffee over there called LAP, Life Among People. I've only learned about this recently through Instagram.
It's called
Reels.
Ich ein Blank.
No, it's called LAP. Blankstrasse. I don't know where I was going with that.
Sorry, Claire. We interrupt each other a lot on the podcast. So that's the other like big thing. These are the things you have to understand about being on a podcast. Saying we're going to put it in the show notes if you can't remember something. Interrupting. And that's about it. Yeah.
Wait, why do you go to Berlin all the time?
I just like Berlin. I mean, I've been like 5 times in the last 2.5 years.
He's also German.
I've got a dual citizenship with Germany. But my dad, who's the German side, he's actually never been to Berlin. He's from like deep south. Rural Bavaria, but I just like to go there. It's nice.
Are you a raver?
I'll go like once every time I'm there.
I'll
admit on the pod, I'm 2 for 4 at Berghain.
Oh, that's 50-50. That's not bad. I'm 0 for 0, so my odds are technically better than yours, but
my odds are perfect as well. So 0 for 0.
Really, what I like to do though is I like to, I mean, there's like so many vintage shops I like to go to. So it's like the routine is like go for a week or so. And like, you know, maybe one day you go to the club and then the other days it's kind of just like walking around, hanging out in the parks, walking by the canal, doing like a, you know, a bunch of shopping, sitting in bars, having a beer, smoking inside.
It's holistic. Yeah. I like that. I walked by the canal. It was really lovely. I did not go clubbing. I went to one party and then I went home. So I have some notes for myself. There are some things I would do differently next time, but the vintage shopping was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the prices are really good there. And there's so many things that you wouldn't really get in New York. Like there's so many, like, it's not always good, but like various like Cavalli, like strange printed shirts that are often horrible, but then every now and again, there's one that's really good. Last time I was there with some friends, my one friend got a bunch of vintage Dolce & Gabbana jeans. Just the kind of things too that, like, again, they're not all great, but then like the ones that are really good, you'd see them at Laura Kaleggi here and they would be like three times the price, if not more.
Yes. The one downside was that somebody here asked me where I got the sunglasses and I said, I was trying to avoid like, oh, I got them in Berlin. And because that's embarrassing to say, I think. But they asked me so many follow-up questions such that I had to say that eventually. Like, I
couldn't avoid it.
You were trying not to gatekeep, but you ended up like gatekeeping worse because you were being like evasive.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was more like I was trying not to be
pretentious.
The person who says, I got them in a vintage store in Berlin, but
unfortunately you are that person.
I was forced to admit it as well.
Reality struck
to like a relative stranger. So that was upsetting, but I'm moved past it. And I love the sunglasses. I wouldn't trade them.
I wanted to bring up your recent profile on Kyle and Veronica. I did read that. I do watch their videos. And I know that this is kind of part of the point of it is that the will they won't they is a big bit. I firmly fall on the side that they are not a couple. I was getting in a fight with my fiance and our friend about this, who they firmly believe that that's a very male. That's, of course, I would think that, and that's a very male perspective on this. Obviously, they're actually dating.
I do have like a definitive answer on this that is not in
the
story, but I'm not at liberty to say.
That's okay.
But they were really fun to profile. I mean, they're both like quite lovely people. They were super down. I'm a Pisces, as Daisy knows, which makes people more liable somehow to spill their guts to me, which I think helps journalistically. It makes you a good reporter.
Claire and I are both Pisces. We do not have the same birthday, but I do have the same birthday as Delia Kai.
Oh, I knew this. Yeah.
Yeah, because the first time we actually met in person was at her birthday party, which was also my birthday.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was a fun. So this is when hotel rooms were not $400. Like my plan for my own birthday was to go to Delia Kai's birthday and then get a hotel room in the city. And that ended up being great. So I strongly recommend piggybacking on somebody else's birthday party if you share a birthday. And I wasn't like going around telling people like, by the way, it's my birthday too. I just had a really nice time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Pisces of it all. I think there's something there because also a lot of my social media team are water signs. But anyway, I was just appreciative. Like Veronica also was getting her lip lined, but like also telling me about her entire emotional journey to becoming a comedian and an actor. So I was amazed at her ability to multitask.
Was this before or after it was known that she was joining SNL?
This was all before. The whole interview happened before it was known that she was joining SNL. And then it happened to be like a miraculous coincidence. And I think Noah like dropped the announcement into our print magazine channel. And we were all like, hell yeah, Veronica. It was nice to be like excited for her in a genuine way. I don't know. Maybe it's like a really corny way to talk about writing a profile, but this is why I got into the business of journalism. Cause I like rooting for people and I like choosing to care about them. Also at the launch party at Sake Bar Soko, for the print issue, both of them came and they hadn't read the story yet. And there were obviously copies of the print issue everywhere. And I looked at them and I was like, you can't read it now. You can't read it in front of me.
Yeah, I would have had.
I literally, it's so easy to forget as an editor what it's like to be a writer. And I've had this experience a couple of times. Like I wrote a piece about the Daily Beast for Business Insider before I left. That was like a long reported feature. And it's so easy to forget as an editor the stakes of being a writer, of having your name on something, of like being exposed. And then I've never had the subject of a story read it in my anywhere in my vicinity. And I felt so acutely stressed in that moment that it was like a remarkable, it was good for me. It was like healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is the terror of creating, and these are the stakes of putting someone else's life into a magazine. Like these are real people that you're writing about, and what you write has consequences. Ultimately, Kyle went away and like read the story and then found me like an hour later and was like, I really liked it. I thought it captured the day really well. And I was like, thank you, Kyle. And he's like 8 feet tall. So I was staring up at him, having this conversation, like shouting. But it was nice. I think they're just like genuinely nice and talented people. So it's nice to see those kinds of people succeed. It's also nice to work on a story that's not like, I mean, working at BI was amazing because I love reporting. I love knowing things that no one else knows. I love like revealing them to the world responsibly and after extensive fact checking. So I, you know, worked on stories about Nickelodeon and stories about America's Next Top Model and stories about Ezra Miller, like some pretty high stakes, heavy pieces about people who felt they had been mistreated, people like allegations of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, a lot of heavy shit. And so it is a nice change of pace to go into this something like the Veronica and Kyle story and to be like, I just want to get you across on paper. And like, I just want to be really honest about who you are and help people get a feel for you. And it feels, you know, in some ways it's that stakes are just different. I mean, they're still high because you're trying to do justice to someone, but they're not.
There's nothing like legal at stake.
Right. Theoretically. I mean, it's not like I'll get sued if I talk about their relationship status. So,
though they did make you sign an NDA, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure the SNL deal was like in the works at the time. It didn't even like come up.
I've seen so much vitriol against her on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of people. I mean, I think she's funny. I like their I watch like all their videos. But a lot of people on Twitter absolutely despise her and think she's the least funny person of all time.
I'm so blissfully off Twitter that I haven't.
I noticed. I was like trying to prep for this. I was like, I wonder what you've been tweeting recently.
Oh, and girl, your last tweet. I don't tweet.
You've got like six tweets in the past year.
I know. I mean, yeah. It's kind of so desolate there that it makes me depressed. And also, it doesn't drive engagement to stories like it used to, and that makes me feel sad. So mostly I post on Instagram about things, which I don't know if that's any better.
Well, to that point, like what we were talking about earlier about Daisy, you mentioned that tweet about everybody having the same 25 references or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I often think like, oh, I should get off Twitter because I'm like, every time I say like, oh, I just read this tweet, which happens multiple times a day, I'm like, I'm so embarrassed to say that. But it's like, I did read this tweet and I am going to reference it.
And be who you are. Don't be ashamed. I've sunglasses in Berlin.
Exactly.
I think it's okay. Yeah.
This is my Berlin sunglasses.
And also, I do still every once in a while when I'm like, I've run myself out of Instagram, or I'm like, oh, I'm stalking my ex's profile. I need to get off. I do
Pisces activities,
and then you go tweet about seeing them in the background of like a Zoran video.
I have, yes. That was more theoretical, but okay. It was the live stream, actually, of the election.
Can you imagine?
That was autofiction?
This is different, yes. But like, what if you found out somebody was cheating on you because they were in the background of a Zoran campaign video?
I'm sure that is happening.
That happens. Like that's somebody's life. Mm-hmm. That's somebody's life.
But the point I wanted to say is like, I'm always like, no, if I get off Twitter, then I will be worse at my job because I won't know things. But I'm also like, maybe I would actually be better at my job because I would spend that time reading other things and like I would
or thinking
follow
your own thing.
Exactly. Thinking my own thoughts instead of saying, oh, I saw this tweet that perfectly explains this. It's like, what if I had that thought that perfectly explains?
It's hard to have an original thought. I mean, it's almost impossible. It's also really hard to write an original sentence. Like I've read so much journalism that is just, it's even hard for me sometimes to not fall back into a cliche that like easily telegraphs exactly what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I do go on Twitter and my one satisfaction is sending funny tweets to my friend before they become screenshotted and posted on Instagram.
Yeah. Have you had a tweet that made the rounds on Instagram?
I have. It was about being an editor. I don't remember what it was. It was something like being an editor is just saying looks good over and over again until you do. I don't remember what it was, but like... Something
I've
like
had
that.
Two. Well, I no, I've had three.
You've had more than two.
Girl Moss and Claire proudly wears a Girl Moss hat when she gardens. So that makes me happy.
I actually wear the original dirt hat.
Oh, dirt. But do you have a Girl Moss?
I don't have a Girl Moss hat.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I misremembered.
It's really okay. I have a really tiny head, so I have a hard time buying hats.
I also have a small head. I wear them, but I have them adjusted to the smallest size. Mm. Okay,
yes.
Well, strike that from the record. It's a dirt
fact
hat.
Checking. Right. Fact checking on the pod.
Girl Moss. JPEG is French for I'm pegging. They loved that one. And Deer magazine. Like deer should have a magazine that's not just about like hunting them, but it's about like
that's
their
one
activities.
Of my favorites. And yeah, that's an original thought.
It was an original thought. But if you go to a party and somebody talks to you about how there should be magazines about deer's activities, like, you know where that came from.
They should pay you.
Yeah. Pay the deer. They need it more. Yeah.
They don't. It's an overpopulation problem. The deer don't need any more money.
I did want to ask.
Okay, Ronald Reagan.
I did want to ask about
the
Daily Beast.
I'm from rural Texas. I mean, not rural Texas. I'm from suburban Texas. We have deer issues.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to ask about the Daily Beast piece because I was looking at your, you know, latest final Business Insider pieces, but I am not a paying Business Insider.
I was going to say,
reader,
do you pay to read that, Francis?
I would love if you could tell us a bit.
Yeah, could you sum it up for us? I mean, obviously we paid to read it, but if you could sum it up for us, that would be great.
Oh, God. I mean, it was essentially a story about what the takeover of the Daily Beast had been like after Ben and Joanna came on, Ben Sherwood and Joanna Coles, as co-owners and I guess kind of like co-editors in chief. That may not be their official titles, but
the headline was like, it's now profitable, but has it lost its bite or something like that, right?
Yes, something like that. I did like a profile of the, oh my God, not Skims. Why can't I remember it? Or, anyway, I did one other piece for Business Insider, but
Was it the period underwear?
Yes.
Things. I always want to call them Skims too.
And then Tushy as well.
Yeah, which I have and love my Tushy, but
should I get a Tushy?
I endorse it.
I always
it.
Hear rave reviews.
Tushy lit.
Yeah. But I think the Thinks story was kind of like a follow-up after all of the pieces came out about Mickey Agrawal of like, I don't know what she's up to now and how she has digested and processed all of it. And it was, you know, a profile that I hope was read as like very objective and, hopefully interesting. And then the Daily Beast story I ended up picking up because I think another reporter had started it and then went out on a long vacation. And then I was the deputy features editor. And also, I think if I had to be a reporter, like if someone waved a wand tomorrow, I would love to be a media reporter. There's a lot of good gossip. There's a lot of great stories. It's quite navel-gazy. I don't know if anyone really is as into it as people who work in media. But I love the personalities. I think crisis mode is a really interesting time to be reporting on an industry. And it turns out that I just know a lot of people in media because I've stayed around for 10 years. So you just kind of collect sources without even trying. Some of them are my friends, some of them are past coworkers, some of them are acquaintances. So the Daily Beast piece sort of happened because that writer had gone out, and also because I happened to be well sourced in that world. And I was able to like pick up conversations that the writer had been having and continue them and continue to kind of follow up with Ben and Joanna and ask to interview them and ask for access and all of this. It was incredibly, I don't know if I would say nerve-wracking. I mean, it was really exciting. Like I like reporting a lot. I think I do well under pressure, which part of that is having so many conversations with PR people for BI stories who maybe weren't happy with the angle we were pursuing or who were disputing some of our reporting. And, you know, I could kind of point to, well, we have X, Y, and Z, and we have this document, and we have this conversation. And that's a lot of what I was able to do with the Daily Beast story is just try to do really good reporting and like get recordings of meetings and get contemporaneous notes and get a lot of documentation and have things like from four or five different people. And so it was a nice exercise in like source maintenance and the gathering of source material, and also like just trying to come at conversations with everyone from a bird's eye point of view. I had a really good time writing it. And then also was like recently accidentally looped into a group text that Joanna Cole sent with their,
oh my God, it's your signal gate.
It really was. I really was like,
you're the Jeffrey Goldberg of,
is this going to be my signal gate? It really wasn't. Yeah. Like it was super benign. She just texted Chris Blasto, who's the PR person. And she was like talking about a tweet that someone had tweeted about the company who was an Axios reporter. And she was like, make sure they like have our statement, something, something. And like, maybe she thought I was Michael Wolff, but she was like, and make sure Michael CC here has it. And I was like, that's not me. Does Michael Wolff have the Texas number? Unclear, but I think I'm not even sure how she ended up looping me in, but I was like, the journey continues, you know, like the connections are eternal. And interestingly, Joanna is someone that my old boss, at Vanity Fair, John Holmans, was really close to. And he was always like calling her up and having gossip sessions with his like feet up on the desk. And like, I don't know. So I had like an interesting POV on her as a person from the start. And so I had a good time trying to like get into the meat of that and like how she and Ben work as media bosses and how that was playing out among the staff as well. But yeah, it was challenging and fun and satisfying and a little bit intimidating at times.
I think the tough thing about media reporting, but really any reporting that relies on access, is it's like it's hard to be really brutally honest about people that you like personally. But so much of that access relies on some sort of social proximity. And when you spend time with people, most people, you enjoy spending time with them. So when it comes time to do critical reporting, you have to be so clear-eyed in those divisions between the personal and the professional. And I almost feel like media reporting is something that people should do in like tours of duty, because
right. You've earned that social capital.
Yeah.
Writing obits when I was in college. Like that was part of the tour of duty.
Yeah. Like you need to like rotate people off before they're too entrenched and like compromised. Maybe people have figured that out. I think it sort of happens de facto because people burn out or they become the story, like Olivia Newsy. She kind of rotated off her tour of duty. Now she's coming back, but maybe she's coming back with like a little bit more better boundaries.
With the, isn't it like the California version of the Daily Beast? Do I have that right?
No, she's not in Mayfair.
Okay, that's what it was.
I think maybe there was some speculation that the California Bureau of the New York Post, whatever that can.
That's what I've.
Okay. Is it California Post?
It's the California. That's what I'm confusing.
All right. Well,
scratch that.
They'll have to find a Temu. Olivia Newsy out in LA.
I'm sure there's plenty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's the West Coast editor, which I'm honestly like so intrigued and excited to see what she does.
Well, now they have her doing Hollywood instead of Washington. So that is kind of like, it is like clearing the slate, right? It's like you got too close to these subjects. So here are some fresh subjects that you like don't have. You don't have as much proximity towards.
This reminds me, did either of you see One Battle After Another?
I just watched it, yes.
Well, fortunately, Francis watched it twice. So collectively, I was talking about this earlier. Seen it three times.
I watched it again last night. But Sean Penn, do you think he's purposely doing an RFK Jr.?
Oh, is he? My takeaway in that movie was that I never want to see his mouth move ever again.
Oh, my God. The mouth acting.
The mouth acting was unhinged, and this also maybe is coming from my point of view as a person who I have a lot of trouble listening to people chew, even if their mouth is closed. So the mouth in general can be, you know, equal parts erotic and disgusting for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, one of the blissful things about not being a politics editor is I don't have to listen to RFK Jr. that much anymore. It didn't immediately land that way to me.
I think it's that they're both kind of like shriveled, leathered men with these like strange voices. The mouth, I mean, very different characters. I've been like trying to imitate his mouth movements. I cannot do it. I don't know how he
does. That's good. You shouldn't.
Thankfully.
You shouldn't aspire to that, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, men, apply your sunscreen and be unproblematic, because otherwise you guys are going to age like a walnut. Mm-hmm.
And unclench your jaw, or else unclench your jaw. Sean Penn.
Right. Well, don't chew gum all on one side. We've been over this.
I was so amazed by the hair as well. Like, his hair? Such a great part of the character. The mouth acting when he takes the comb and runs it through his own tongue and then with the noise as well, with the sound effect of
that was so fun to do when you were a kid, though. You know, like,
I've never done that in my life.
Everyone's dad had those little disposable black combs, right? And the tines of the comb are very flexible. Oh, I was doing all sorts of little tricks with that. You know what I'm talking about?
No,
it's like fun. You can run your finger over it. Okay.
I mean, I had like a hairbrush because I had very long hair, and I would like get it wet under the sink and then brush my hair.
I mean, like a men's black comb. Do people not use those anymore?
I did for a while, and then I got really scared about microplastics and I switched to wood.
Mm. Okay, that's really classy. I hadn't even considered that. I mean, I don't even comb my hair half the time, so
I mean,
the joy of chopping it off.
I'm sure the wood comb is sealed with like a plastic residue aerosol that is equally as bad for me as the plastic comb.
Is that like Mason Pearson? Are those like the tortoiseshell ones?
No, it's from Amazon. Like, it's not fancy. It's just, I just had a spiral, and that's what happened.
You gotta keep those away from your scalp.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, back on a media business tip. So I know that Highest Nobody is like restructuring a bit, and the e-com is shutting down by the end of the year, that we talked about the store. Is like, how much of, is it like, because there's the agency sort of side, right? And then the editorial side. Is it that the editorial is in New York and the agency is in Berlin? How does this work?
No, both of the sides of the business are kind of across both offices. Mm. Interestingly, there's a lot of agency side in New York, and there's some editorial also in Berlin. Like, our visuals director is there, operations director is there.
How many people is it?
The editorial team? This is such a good question, because people ask me to ballpark this all the time, and I'm so bad at numbers, but like, I can remember the name of the PR person that I talked to for the Perfumer H story. It's Harriet. How many people are there?
Hi, Harriet.
Hi, Harriet. She was so lovely to work with. Would do it again at any point. But I think maybe like 25 people on edit, maybe 20. I have to count my calendar invite, but it's a fairly small team overall.
Perfumer H, I only learned about them because they have them at Venn Space and down in Carroll Gardens. And
they also have them at the High Snobiety store in Berlin.
There you go. Very nice perfumes.
Which had nothing to do, in fact, with the way that we assigned that story. It just was a nice coincidence. Hmm.
Is there, this is a theme on this podcast, is like the relationship between like revenue and editorial at media businesses, right? Like how much is that like open or closed, that relationship for in your work?
Yeah. I mean, again, super interesting for me coming from strictly reportorial background, where that always was incredibly divided, mm-hmm. but also we were doing like very different kinds of stories. So it wouldn't have made sense to bring the two closer together. But also something I talked to Noah about a lot when I was coming on was like this business model that High Snob has and how it's different and how it can maybe like build in a little more security because it's not as traffic reliant at a time when everyone is scrambling trying to figure out traffic. There's like some transparency. There's not a ton of overlap. There's like one, our director of editorial operations is kind of the go-between between the editorial team and the sales team, the branded partnerships team, the agency side. So they have an overview of what our editorial calendar looks like, and then they can use that to then go to the branded side and say, this is what's upcoming, and like this is the talent we have planned for, I don't know, this month, next month, the third month. And then oftentimes there's like brand synergy there. Like, I don't know, maybe someone that we're planning on covering organically anyway has a brand deal with this person, or not person, with this company. Oh God, our people.
Corporations are people.
Our brands people. Yeah, literally. But maybe there is like a natural connection there. And then our business side can like reach out to the brand and say, we have this upcoming, are you interested in sponsoring it? Or maybe sometimes it happens vice versa, where a brand is like working with a musician or an actor that we're interested in covering, and it can come through that channel. Everything is editorially driven. Like, we kind of have the final say of what the stories are and who we feature and who we're interested in and like what we want to talk about. So I really appreciate that about the way that we work, is like, if it doesn't fit with the editorial vision, maybe it gets slotted in some different way, but we're not going to do like a feature story about it just because it will get us X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. It feels like there's still some integrity there. And I think a lot of that is like the way that Noah wants to work, which again aligns with like how I feel about the stories that we publish. So it's nice, but yeah, it's interesting in that like it's closer church and state than anywhere else I've worked. But sometimes that can be beautiful. Like sometimes it really works out. Like we assigned a Natasha Cloud digital cover, which was something I was like obsessed with and wanted to get off the ground from the second I started, because I was like, no one at Business Insider would really ever do anything about Natasha Cloud unless there was like a Business of the WNBA story. But I was so interested in her as a person and like who she was and what she represented. And she was so cool and so honest and just like seemed really lovely. And it just so happened that like the branded side, you know, was made aware of the story, and then Pinterest sponsors the WNBA. Well, I think the Liberty, maybe they have a special relationship with the league. And then Pinterest came to us and said, oh, we want to like contribute to this Natasha Cloud story in some way. So I think they ended up like running banner ads next to it. And then they sponsored a zine, like a print zine of the digital cover, which was delightful. I love a zine and I love the design. And then we did an event with them and Tosh came and it was like a tattoo party, which was, it was just like really worked out.
Did you get a tattoo at the party?
I did get a tattoo at the party. I what felt like that? I had to do like a family hold back thing. So like I walked in and it was like, oh no, I don't need a tattoo. And then everyone was like, get a tattoo, like sign up. And I was like, fine, twist my arm. So I got this little, it's a little crusty right now because it's healing, but it's just a little NYC
tattoo.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
As a transplant, it feels a little questionable, but I've also lived here for like 11 years now. So that's, I was like, you know what? And my astrocartography is all over New York, like all of my lines.
I haven't done mine. How did you do it?
I have an astrologer. I can give you their name if you want.
You know what? Hook me up.
This tattoo wasn't okay. So I'm curious if it was done, if it's related to this. I was walking around a couple weekends ago and in Nolita, kind of right by Iconic Magazines, there's tiny Zaps.
What's Iconic Magazines?
Daisy, don't bring that bit back. But but it's like, it's okay. I mean, here's this picture I took. You won't be able to see, but it's tiny, small tattoo. It's basically a stick and poke shop.
No.
So this was, I was kind of flabbergasted. I'm like, they're gentrifying the stick and poke.
They've already gentrified tattoos. I mean,
long ago, but
Invisible Ink brand.
It was profane. Like, it just felt so profane to see a store front that's like entirely based on this. I guess it's just the, what's the piercing brand?
Studs.
It's like studs for stick and pokes.
Well, Claire, I saw a just like screenshot on Instagram. Somebody had steak frites written in cursive that actually looks similar to yours. I literally almost sent it to you yesterday and then I couldn't remember if you're vegetarian.
No, everyone thinks I'm a vegetarian. This is a strange thing to me. I think it's because I'm like queer and
getting stereotyped.
Like kind of alt looking and maybe like nice. I don't know.
You're like, fuck those animals.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm from Texas. I love
steak.
I love treats. I love ribs. I love brisket. Like I get barbecue and Tex-Mex when I come home. It's such a crucial cornerstone of who I am. It's my girlfriend and I, like the first time we got a steak together, it was the reveal of like how we get it done. And
Obviously, it's medium rare.
For me, it is. It's more on the rare side.
Okay,
and she's more on the medium side. And it was a real moment of like, oh my God, is this going to work out?
Medium, not medium rare. She's medium.
Yeah, but we got medium rare, which is in between our preferences. And I went for the middle, she went for the ends, and it actually was fine. So we saved it. But yeah, this tattoo is by this artist named Cake, who is like a queer Brooklyn tattooer with a really cool wife and who's just like a big sweetie. And she collaborated with Natasha on the designs. So all the flash sheet that she made was an homage to Tosh and the Liberty, which I thought was cool.
Claire, before you go, I want to ask you, who is your dream profile? Like, I know you came in wanting to do Tosh, but like, is there somebody else who's like, you're a white whale where you're like, if I could profile this person for High Snob, I would die happy.
Well, this would not be for High Snob, but I've always wanted to profile Rebecca Mercer. Mostly because this is my white whale, like a few years ago when I was at VF and an anonymous friend's parents were neighbors with her. And I was like, this is my in, like, I want to go to my friend's parents' house for Thanksgiving and like meet the Mercers and convince her to do a story because she's famously so press shy. This story obviously was like a huge deal during the rise of Trump because it bankrolled so much of that, but I'm not convinced that they're not still doing that. And I'm just really curious about her. Like there was so much written about her around her, but she never really did any interviews. So that was my white whale for a while. Rebecca Mercer, if you hear this. It's also interesting because she has zero motivation to do any press or talk to anyone. So it's like, how do you get someone like that to agree to give you like a window into their world and their psyche? Like, it's very difficult. But yeah, that would be my right whale from that like part of the world.
Well, Rebecca,
I don't know
Mercer,
if I have another one.
If
like a cultural one, huh?
I said Rebecca Mercer. If you're listening,
he's gonna make us end on this note.
Oh no!
He's forcing an end.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many like cultural people that I want to talk to as well, but that is just the first thing that comes to mind.
I would love to. This is not me pitching myself to High Snob, but I have two people that I get as doppelgangers, mostly like specific younger photos of them. Mm. Young Cher and young Angelica Houston. And I would love to do, there's a photo of them with Jack Nicholson together, like in the same photo. I would love to do maybe both of them at the same time, just like a round table. Like I spend the whole day hanging out with Cher and Angelica Houston. Like that would be really fun. That would be my white whale.
You know what? Maybe my white whale is Cher. I love Cher.
You should do this.
Think about her all the time. I think her internet presence is amazing. I've watched every film she's in, essentially. Like, I have listened to her music since I was probably 6 years old because my mom used to play her hit singles on a CD-ROM in our Suburban. And I would take out the sleeve from the CD case, and she was wearing like a thong in the album art. Yes, it was like lavender with silver accents. It was so
beautiful.
You were
like, I really like this.
Well, no, I was just like, I had not seen a thong. I didn't know what it was. I was so young.
What is this technology?
My mother, like, we were quite bodily conservative as a family, like not super intimate. And I've never seen anything like it. And I was just like, who is this woman? And like, what is she wearing? And why is she so fabulous? And that is like a core memory for me. And I don't even think it's like a core queer memory. I think it's just like a core cultural memory. I'd love to profile Cher. I think she's
you should
so
take Cher
fabulous.
Vintage shopping in Berlin. And write a profile.
There you go.
It.
Full circle.
Wow.
Noah, please let Claire do this story.
I think Cher didn't she do an interview with Semi recently about like love and relationships, or am I imagining that?
I think so. I mean, she said a lot of really smart stuff about love and relationships recently.
Yeah.
I would love to ask the desire question to Cher.
I mean, all I'm seeing, I Googled Cher interview, so I don't know.
Oh,
but,
good one.
She was
great
on
SEO.
Great SEO. The biggest one that's coming up is she was on CBS a year ago. I don't know if that's
View?
What you're talking about, but and then she was on Jimmy Kimmel.
Barry Weiss, if you're listening. Ago.
So I don't know.
Was she in, did she do like an interview magazine story?
Oh, yes. But talking to who?
That's
it was somebody interesting
came from.
Maybe she was interviewing. Right. I'm not finding it.
They usually have two separate celebs.
Looking at a cover she did though from the 80s.
Okay,
Google
I don't know what
so
I'm
chopped,
but anyway,
guys.
I would love a Cher story.
Cher, if you're listening.
Yeah, I also would love to. I mean, this is someone we've been talking about a lot in pitch meetings, but I would love to profile Faye Webster. I think she's really cool. I'm a big weirdo. She's a big weirdo. She
just
goes yo-yoing. We do look. That's funny.
I don't know. I'm picking that up.
Thanks.
I listened to her a lot. Like 3 years ago, I was listening to her a lot. That one album. Has she released new music? I haven't been keeping track.
The hardcore fan actually is my best friend Alexis. They are obsessed with Faye Webster. They used to like put her on in my apartment as a bit because I don't really like sad music. I can't handle it. I'm too emotional already and I can't be dragged over the edge of the cliff in that way. But they had permission to control my Google Home. So when they would walk into to my apartment where I live and we're trying to be at peace, they would put on a Faye Webster song and then my whole
it's very at peace music. The album I was listening to a lot was I'm Funny, I Know I'm Funny, Haha from 3 years ago.
I think I've only listened to peaceful. Lego Ring mainly.
Whatever they would play, it made me feel sad. And and so I like banned their Webster. But I actually think she's like extremely cool and very like high snob in the way that she's just very honest as a person. So who knows?
I love both of these ideas. I signed off.
Thank you so much. Approved. My signing visuals off. Editor, Azra, loves to say, approved.
Speaking of signing off.
Speaking of signing off,
thank you for coming on. Thank you so much.